everybody. Fáilte. Fáilte Isteach, you're very, very welcome to the 28th Bob Rowe International Arts Festival for Children. And we're really honoured and delighted to have Trish Ford here, a long-time friend of the festival and her inaugural Laureate Nano lecture. Trish, as you'll hear, of course, is a wonderful author, but she's also one of the co-founders of Bob Rowe. And it was she and Jean Parkinson and others who had the vision to decide that actually Galway and Galway's children deserve to have an international festival just for them. And aren't we very lucky that they had that vision? And there aren't many small towns on a rugged coast around the world that have a festival like this for our children. But above all, Trish is a really kind, generous, really fun and inspirational person. And I really admire her tenacity in terms of really promoting children's arts and children's literature over many, many years. I hang on her words; they're really like liquid gold. And she has inspired several generations, I'd say, probably at this point, of children around Galway and the West. So I'm going to hand over now to Elena from Children's Books Ireland. Delighted to have you, and she's going to introduce Trish.
Thank you, Aisling, and good evening, folks. My name's Elena, I'm the CEO of Children's Books Ireland, and I've had the good fortune to know and to work with our Laureate Nano, Trish Ford, for a few years now. And given that we're in her hometown tonight, I'm sure many of you can say the same and have worked with Trish throughout your careers too. Trish's career has long been rooted in the arts, as Aisling said, and both as a former director of the Galway Arts Festival and co-founder of this very festival, Galway has a lot to thank her for. But so do the wider children who have been reading her books over a very long time. I met Trish 12 years ago when she was working on her first novel for older children, The Wordsmith, and got to know her better still when she joined the board of Children's Books Ireland in 2014, eventually becoming our chair, and an excellent one at that, during a period of huge growth and change and challenge for the organisation during the pandemic years. Her wonderful work in English and Irish for children of all ages has captivated, entertained and amazed me, and later my own children, and quite a lot more children than that for as long as I've known her. So when Patricia was selected as Laureate in early 2023, ahead of her announcement that May, it was a really special honour to make that call and break the news to her. She didn't believe me. But that will tell you a little bit about Trish and what she's like. She is going to hold this role of Laureate Nano until 2026. And Laureate Nano is an initiative of the Arts Council, supported by the Arts Council of Northern Ireland, the Department of Children, and managed and delivered on Council's behalf by Children's Books Ireland. It honours an artist of exceptional talent and commitment, no better description for our Trish. It champions and celebrates literature for children and young people and inspires generations of writers, illustrators and readers. The Laureate is a figurehead and a leader in the sector, and there's no doubt but that Trish is beloved by all of her peers. The writers and illustrators of Ireland would gladly follow her into battle or, in Trish's case, onto a bus, travelling down the wild Atlantic Way, no questions asked. Trish published her first book for children in 1990, and it's been followed by a wide range of picture books, early readers, novels, many of them award winners. The Wordsmith won a White Raven Award from the International Youth Library. It's an American Library Association notable book for children in the States, and it was shortlisted for what we now call the KPMG Children's Books Ireland Awards, as was her more recent novel, The Girl Who Fell to Earth, also shortlisted for the An Post Irish Book Awards. In 2019, the hilarious Bumfizzle Best on Planet Earth was chosen as the Dublin UNESCO Citywide Read and was shared with children all over Dublin City. Closer to home, in 2020, she published the most beautiful picture book in both English and Irish about High Brazel. To the Island, Until On Here, was commissioned to celebrate Galway's 2020 City of Culture designation and was given for free to very happy children all over Galway. Her latest book, The Lost Dogs, has just been published a fortnight ago, illustrated by James Brown, and we are excited to see what comes next for her. Trish also writes for television, delivers screenwriting workshops to older children, and is the writer of Fiddle Gurm, which premiered here in Galway at the Film Fla in July and which won the Best Irish First Feature Award. The film is having its North American premiere at the Newport Beach Film Fest this Sunday and Monday. She's a former primary school teacher and she understands children innately. It is one of the things that makes her so brilliant at capturing the imaginations of children, both on the page and in the room. No matter how many times I hear her speaking to groups, young and old, telling stories or lies, I always, always look forward to it. And there is no doubt that we are in for a treat this evening. Folks, please welcome Laureate Nanogue, Patricia Ford.
Gurmagi agus tá sé inta chalagan eicáil an seo ar an ina fluch seo in Gaillia. So gurmagi as hacht. It's so nice to see all those friendly faces in the audience on this wet Friday in Galway. So you should all get medals for just turning up. So sometimes I still can't believe how lucky I am that I've managed to spend the best part of my life working in the arts. Working in the field of creativity. But creativity means different things to different people. For some people, creativity is all about being a painter or a potter or being very good at making things or DIY or origami. For me, being creative is all about coming up with ideas, having notions, inventing things. And from those notions, sometimes, I write a book. It's also about asking questions, wondering, what if? The most common question I get asked nowadays is, why do you write for children? One of the reasons that I write for children is that I've noticed that children are particularly adept at seeing the world in a different way. Their talent for seeing outside the box starts in their bodies. If you ever notice a child running through the street, jumping in puddles, they're fearless. They're not thinking about wet socks and shoes or what might happen next. They're just living in the moment. We don't always give them credit for it, but a lot of their everyday behaviour shows courage and resilience and a lack of fear as they approach things for the very first time. In fact, we adults have to teach them to be afraid, lest they put their hand in the fire or wander off with some stranger. Gradually, as we grow and develop, we lose that initial fearlessness and will choose fear over creativity every time, because it's easier to stay on the main road, to be safe. We stigmatise mistakes. We see failure as a bad thing, rather than an attempt at doing something in a new way. In short, we grow out of creativity. I found that you could counteract that by spending time with children. The late Sir Ken Robinson, a British author and advisor on arts in education for many years, was somebody I enjoyed listening to, especially when he spoke about creativity. In a TED talk that he gave in 2006, he talked about this idea and told a great story about a little girl who was drawing a picture in school. The teacher asked her what she was drawing. And the child said, I'm drawing a picture of God. But no one knows what God looks like, the teacher said. They will in a minute, the child replied. I write for children because I love that audacity of childhood. I love the way they believe that they're capable of anything. This past April, I was lucky enough to take a bus full of children's writers and illustrators down along the Wild Atlantic Way in a fabulous pink bus, the Bubblegum Bus. Over the course of two frenetic weeks, we met 3,000 children. We met parents and teachers. We visited schools and libraries and bookshops. We gave away 2,000 free books. We did events as Gaeilge and in English. We played to up to 300 children in various theatres along the coast. And in a school in Glenties, we played to the entire school population, 9 children. We had 36 artists who came and went from the bus, sharing their ideas and fostering a love of reading in the children that we met. During that time, I was once again reminded of the innate confidence of little ones. I was dealing mostly with the younger ones, the 5-year-olds, the 6-year-olds. These were Irish children and children who had been born somewhere else but were living along the West Coast now. All of them had one thing in common. There was no classroom I went into that did not contain experts. One of the projects I did on the tour was a thing we call the fairies. This was a foray into immersive play. Now, immersive play is not a new idea. It's been around for a long time. 30 or so years ago in Galway, as a teacher, I discovered it when I took a workshop with Rebecca Bartlett, who is here with us tonight. Lately, I've been thinking about immersive play in a different way. I feel that it could have benefits for children who are just learning to read, but also children who are beginning to make up their own stories. Being totally immersed in play develops attention span and the suspension of disbelief, both qualities very important when it comes to reading, but also helps children with world building in their own inventions. So I came up with the idea for the fairies. When I started talking to infants and senior infants, I would be interrupted by a team member who presented me with a very, very small suitcase and asked if it were mine. The tiny suitcase was full of artifacts made by the talented writer and maker Eve MacDonald. The children and I quickly deduced that the case was owned by a fairy called Maisie. There were all kinds of things in it, like a tiny sandwich, an apple, a magic wand, invisibility dust. But the one that seemed to grab the children's attention more than any other was a little book that said, "How to Speak Human." I would show the children the book and then ask them, if the fairies don't speak human, what do they speak? Without fail, somebody would say, they speak fairy. So I thought I'd investigate that further and started to say to the children, well, I speak English, I speak Irish, I speak a little bit of French, but I don't speak any fairy. And I'd love to just be able to say hello or goodbye, but I suppose I never will. Wait a beat. Without fail, a hand would go up and an expert would appear. We have a clip here from a video that we made about the tour where you can see what I'm talking about.
Listen to him, I think he knows how fairies talk. Listen, do it again.
See? That little boy was in Killybegs. In Sligo, a 5-year-old sang Happy Birthday in fairy without any hesitation at all. Days after the bus left, each school received a letter from Maisie. "Dear human child," it said, "thank you for sending the suitcase back to me. I will tell you a secret. I am hiding on the bus. The writers and illustrators never see me. I'm good at hiding. I was even hiding when you met me. When I was peeping out at you, did you see me? I enjoyed seeing all your art. Oops, I have to go now. I hear the humans coming back. Lots of love, Maisie. As one teacher said in a text, the letter arrived today. Hook, line and sinker. In May, we took that idea of immersive play a little further and presented an event called The Storybird, Éineadh Scéalaíochta, as part of ILFD. Fellow writer Alan Nolan and I met a group of very young children in Merrion Square and introduced ourselves as explorers of the imagination who were in search of a very elusive storybird. We were told that it had been seen around the park and asked the children to join us in searching for it. On our way around the park, we found lots of clues, letters hanging from the trees, letters that the storybird ate, some scat also containing letters, a fragment of shell, a feather. As we went around the park, the tension grew. Had something happened to the bird? When we finally got to our destination, two children volunteered to go into the tent. And there, to our amazement, they found a nest with three eggs in it. Sometime later, after much chat about how to attract the bird appeared. It appeared thanks to the generosity of Phoebean and the talent of puppeteer Ethel Burke. The nest and the clues were once again created by Eve MacDonald. That ability that children have to leave this world and become totally immersed in another is something extraordinary. But with children playing less and less, I fear that it is something important that is being lost. To read a book, you need to believe in story, to believe that a writer can create another world or a different version of this world for you to become immersed in. Lately, I fear that the world of childhood is becoming smaller. Children are busy with phones and screens and activities, but have less time to create, to daydream, to find their own way. So I write to keep the playfulness alive. Why does anyone write for children? We write to escape and to offer children an escape too. Books are a door into another world, and we all need to be able to leave this world behind us from time to time. We saw that during the pandemic when reading flourished. As Irish people, over the years, one of the advantages of being dominated by the Catholic Church was that we grew up believing that there was a whole other world right beside us. There were saints and angels, there was God and the devil. This world had its own language too. As children, we prayed, we quietened our mind and repeated mantras over and over. The family rosary, Mass on Sunday, religion class in school, the penny catechism. Who made the world? God made the world. Who is God? God is our Father in heaven. Some of you didn't learn that. That ability to go from one world to the next is a learned thing, I think. Having accepted that there was one other world happening beside us into which we could escape, it was easy enough to imagine others. Writing fiction demands that ability to cross from one world to another, and there are so many worlds in a child's imagination. In my case, that world was the world of the past. My five sisters and I grew up in a 300-year-old house in Market Street. By the age of 12, I'd become a regular visitor to Kenny's bookshop, and Mrs. Kenny was the first person to introduce me to Hardiman's History of Galway. I became fascinated with the idea that our house had once housed one of the tribes of Galway, and that there was a tunnel that went from our house to another tribe's house on Abbeygate Street. Suddenly, a parallel world had opened up. I imagined Christopher Columbus hurrying down Market Street, shivering in the cold. He was used to Spain. He was on his way to St. Nicholas's, where he would pray before heading off in search of new lands. I could see Gráinne Whale, the famous pirate, hiding in shadows, her black shawl wrapped around her, plotting attacks on the British fleet out in the bay. I could see Oliver Cromwell's soldiers lined up outside the city walls in 1651 during the Siege of Galway, and Catherine Lynch being rescued from Kerwin's Lane by Claddagh fishermen. That was another world to dip into, part of the apprenticeship of becoming a writer. And there was yet another world available to me. I was lucky enough to be bilingual by the time I was 5. I spoke Irish and English, and dipping into a second language gives you access to another world, the world of that language. Irish words intrigued me. They seemed to be far more cinematic than the English ones. This is a language, after all, where a jellyfish is a smuggler's own, a seal's snot. And the spotted ladybird is Bonine Jay, God's little cow. An otter is a Madra Ishka, or water dog, and a porpoise, a Mukwara, or a sea pig. The bat is a Skihon Lahar, or leather wing, while a wolf is the beautiful Machtira, son of the land. And it wasn't just the words. It was the wealth of stories and songs and poems that came with it. Our ancestors lived beside the fairy world, and there are so many relics of that in the language and in the stories. I was lucky enough to hear writer Monaghan McGann talk about that some years ago. And he talked about the word Cianthar, a word which a lot of us will know, which means a region or a district. But then he talked about another word, which he said is the opposite of Cianthar. That word is Altar. Altar means the other world, the nether region. So through stories that I learned from books, I began to realise that for our ancestors, there was a very thin veil between this world and the next. And that idea took my breath away. In Market Street, I heard the story of Hybrazel, a mysterious island that appeared every 7 years out in Galway Bay. As a child, I took to going down to the Claddagh and looking out to the horizon, hoping to see this magical place. I never did, but in 2020, I wrote a picture book called To the Island, Until On Here. And through the talent of illustrator Nicola Bernadelli, I finally got to visit it. Many worlds then to dive into as a child. And finally, I discovered that there was a magical space where imagination could thrive. My counterpart in the UK, Children's Laureate Frank Cottrell Boyce, described it as the compost of the imagination, the art of reading. So why do I write for children? I don't think that there was ever a writer who wasn't a reader first. I write because I read. I write for children because I was and I am a reader. And I am a reader because I had a mother who loved books and because I had access to a library. Our library in Galway shared a space with the courthouse when I was a child. The library is 100 years old next year, and the delightful people who work there plan to publish a book to celebrate that birthday. Libraries are so important for our children. They aren't just a place to find books. They're a place of shelter, a place where we are all equal, and the shelves full of stories don't judge the people who read them. Author and former Laureate na nOg, Siobhan Parkinson, has said that writing and reading are two sides of the same coin, and that writing is nothing but advanced reading. And I agree with her. When adults ask me the question, you can almost hear the implied subtext. And the subtext is, when will you write a proper book? When will you graduate to write for adults? I've never seen children's literature in that way. I do read books written for adults, course I do. I am one. But I've never felt the yen to write one. I write for children for many reasons, but one of them is that there is no better reader to write for. There is no better audience than a 10-year-old engrossed in a book. They are at their most concentrated then. They don't just read a book, they devour a book. They become totally immersed in the story. If you're lucky enough to meet them, as I do, they will tell you things you don't remember about your own book. They have inhaled it. They will often tell you about scenes that they've read in the book, scenes that I never wrote. But they have become active participants in the making of the story. This is a thing that's very common to young children, where their imaginations will invent other scenarios, sometimes backstories, sometimes two characters who never meet in the book. But in the child's imagination, they do meet, and I love that. I love that I send a book out and it's not over. They continue the story. But I also write for children because they are such honest reviewers. They're not slow to tell you what they thought about your book. Now, luckily, that's often lovely letters saying, oh, please write another book. We love your characters. To be honest, not that much. But here's one I got recently. It was when The Wordsmith was published in Turkey. And obviously, the young boy who wrote this letter had very strong opinions. So I'll read it to you for the tape, as they say. Hello. I am a 13-year-old reader. I like the subject of your book very much, but I do not like it. The book, presumably. Could you please allow me to write the book on the same subject? I think if an adult had written that, they would have said, good idea, poor execution. And there would have been issues around copyright. But this child knew exactly what he thought himself, and are a great and honest audience. When you write for children, you're allowed back into their world. You can discuss all sorts of topics with them. When my novel, The Girl Who Fell to Earth, came out, I did a small tour of County Clare. It was a lovely sunny day, and I'd met a group of 9 and 10-year-old boys in Newmarket on Fergus. They had read my book, and they were keen to discuss it. One of the ideas in the book had to do with eternal life. The protagonist had come from a planet where people lived forever. I told the children that in doing research for the book, I'd spoken to a scientist at the university in Galway, and he had told me that the next frontier for science was death itself. He was working on a microscopic worm that he couldn't kill. He told me in all sincerity that if he could discover what was keeping it alive, he would have the secret of eternal life. His answer made me instantly regret that I was wasting his time having coffee with me. But back to Newmarket on Fergus. I asked the children if they would like to live forever. Most of them did, but one young fella had a different view. He said that he wouldn't like to live forever because if you did, there would be no more surprises. With an eternal life, you would eventually know everything, have solved all the mysteries, and you would just be, well, bored. I said earlier that when you work with children, you're never short of experts, but you're never short of philosophers either. I write for children because it brings me back to what Patty Kavanagh called that childhood country. It allows you to remember what it was to believe that everything was possible, that the world was a blank page, and it brings you back to that sense of awe and wonder, a way of looking at the world that you never fully capture again. It brings me back to the first time I read The Hobbit. In a hole in the ground, there lived a hobbit. Entering into that world of magnificence, I so identified with Bilbo Baggins. I loved his comfortable home, the pantry full of good food, And I was absolutely devastated when Gandalf turned up, wanting Bilbo and I to go on an adventure. On that, Bilbo and I were of one mind. Neither of us were the adventurous types. I thought that I would rather stick pins in my eyes and settle on Mutton Island than head off with this mad wizard. Bilbo thought something similar. But off he went, the two of us, out of our comfort zone, out to the misty mountains and on through Goblin Town, from there to Eriador and the Great Hall of Tran. We came home changed. We came home braver and more resilient. And we came home knowing that all things were possible if you were brave enough to go for it. Through the trials of school and best friends and dead beloved dogs, I read. Through secondary school and puberty and best friends and worst boyfriends, I read. Through courtship and getting married, I read. As a mother up at night with a small baby, I read. As a teacher, I read. And finally, to become a writer, I read. I couldn't endure a world without books, a world where I couldn't read. And as a writer, I want to pass that on to the next generation. So why do I write for children? To liberate them. I want to tell children that they're special and unique and that they can find their own way through the world. Childhood may be a sacred space, and I think it is, but it isn't without darkness. Children are powerless and voiceless. Luckily, most of them are surrounded by loving, caring adults, but that's not always the case. At the benign end of the scale, they are also surrounded by adults, many of whom have lost their own sense of wonder and awe, their own inner child. At the malign end, they are faced with adults who would inflict lasting damage or totally destroy them. One of my favourite authors, David Almond, said it far better than I ever could when he said, "I write to help children transcend the narrow visions they are being offered by some of our so-called leaders, to become free of outmoded ways of thinking and behaving, to free them of the dull destroyers who surround us all. Dull destroyers who might appear to be grown up, but who have left the child behind. They have no child within themselves, or if they do, it is a secret, hidden thing that weeps in the darkest corner of the soul. Every day we are bombarded by images of innocent children being destroyed in Ukraine, in Palestine, in Sudan. Other children are destroyed in their own homes, in their own communities. I do think that it's our duty to pass on the best of this world to the next generation, to give them bluebells and gooseberries, heather and moss, beavers and rabbits. But it's also our duty to pass on values. Books are the final resting place of our collected knowledge and wisdom as human beings. When I was a child, we were never far from a grown-up. There were parents and aunts and uncles and neighbours and teachers and librarians. They talked to us and we sometimes listened. More often than that, we would listen in on their conversations to learn what was really going on. We could do this because they weren't on their phones and nor were we. There are many young people today who only hear the voice of their peers. They listen to that voice all day in school and then continue the conversation at home on their phones. The opinions they form, the values they learn, are then sent back to them via an algorithm until many of them believe that there is only one story, only one version. Sometimes the voice of an author is the last adult voice they're actively listening to. We have the unique privilege of speaking directly to them, whispering into their ear as they turn pages at the end of a long day, showing them themselves and others navigating this often difficult world, giving them hope that others have travelled the same world and survived. That is both a privilege and a responsibility. Why do I write for children? Because I'm shocked at what reading can do. Studies now show that reading can be life-saving. It has a hugely positive impact on literacy and numeracy. It promotes better mental health. Children who read for pleasure at the age of 10 will do better academically. They'll be more empathetic and they will be happier. Happier. Reading is a joy, not a chore. But reading is also freedom. The freedom to access information about the world. The freedom to hear more than one version of a story. So here is something so simple and yet so powerful. You'd imagine we'd put all our resources, all of our energy behind it, and yet data from the Growing Up in Ireland survey tells a very different story. At the age of 9 months, 19.5% of infants are never read to. At 3 years, 20% are read to infrequently, three or fewer days a week. At 9 years of age, 94% of our children are reading for pleasure. At 13 years, 19% say they never read. At age 17, 53% say that they never read. I never find statistics entertaining or mind-boggling, but those statistics caught me off guard. They seem to be particularly grim. Catherine Rundell is a fabulous writer for children, and here is what she has to say about that state of play. If you cut a person off from reading, you cut them off from the song that humanity has been singing for thousands of years. You cut them off from what we have laid out for the next generation and the next to pass on. It is in writing that we've preserved our boldest, most original thought, our best jokes, and most generous comfort. Childhood is short and the need is urgent. We have to have books for children, and we must have books, we must have people who can persuade them to read. The best persuasion is a great story, and though I may not have written a great story yet, I want to keep on trying. As a writer, you're never truly happy with the finished book. If you were, why would you bother writing another one? So I write to be part of the movement that will turn children into readers, because according to the statistics, it might save their lives. Why do I write for children? Because the books that I read as a child were the best books, the books that stay with you forever. The books being written today are no less awe-inspiring. Here in Ireland, we have a booming, rich, and diverse community of children's writers. We need to nurture and grow that talent and support them whenever we can. As Christmas approaches, I would urge people to think carefully when choosing books for children. We want children to love all books, but we want them to take particular pleasure and a special pride in Irish ones. Earlier this month, Children's Books Ireland released a guide of recommended Irish books for children, and it's available in libraries and bookshops and online. Please take a look at it and be amazed at the amount of great books for children coming out in Ireland at the moment. This year's Children's Book of the Year, for example, was by Clara Kumagai, who wrote a thrilling book full of Japanese folklore and Irish eloquence called Catfish Rolling. Galwegian Serena Molloy has written a beautiful verse novel that speaks to everyone, but nods to children who are dyslexic, letting them see themselves, and Serena's vividly created world. Maeve MacDonald, another Galway woman, has written a spooky and mysterious tale called Into the Witchwood. I mention these three because they're all debut writers, showing how bright the future of Irish children's books is. Tá roi orga agin fúlaithe freisin, le leabhar atá scríb a scaoilge go fáistí. Tá fáilteoirí íontacha agan ag forbairt leabhar do chula íosgrúpa, anas go mbeidh páistí le gaoilge in nánaí théine eicáil in áirlitríocht chomá. And that brings me to another reason why I write for children. We write to give them roots. One of the things I love to talk to children about is history. And now that history is not a compulsory subject in secondary school, that seems to be even more important. Talking to children and young people about the past and about their history is really enlightening and frightening in some ways when you see how little they know. If they don't know their own history, how can they see history repeating itself? Lots of Irish writers are writing historical fiction and doing a fabulous job of telling children about their past. I wrote a book for Fata Fata recently, set in the Cromwellian era, about the last wolf in Ireland called An Mac Tíre Deirneach. In it, Cromwell is trying to eradicate the wolf for easier access to Ireland's oak trees. And a little girl tries to save what she believes is the last wolf in Ireland. Talking to children about the book, most don't know that there were ever wolves in Ireland, and even fewer knew who Cromwell was. The thing that resonated most with them was that the wolf became extinct in Ireland, and bear worries about climate change and how more animals and birds are becoming extinct across the world. Nonetheless, the heroine in the book is their age, and she takes control in the story and does her part to help the wolves. History often shows children that even the smallest action helps, and I think they really need that encouragement now. History is scattered throughout my other books. In The Wordsmith, I leaned into Irish history. The Wordsmith is a book set in the future about global warming. All of Earth has drowned bar one small group who have survived in a place called Ark. Ark is a dictatorship where, amongst other things, language is strictly controlled. People are only allowed a list of 500 words. Children wear sticks around their necks and get a notch on this stick if they speak a word that is not on the approved list. When they have 10 notches, they are thrown into the woods to be eaten by the wolves. Of course, I stole that idea from Irish history. In the 19th century, children were strongly discouraged from speaking Irish in school. The tally stick, or bathyscar in Irish, was introduced into classrooms where children had to wear a stick on a piece of string around their necks. Each time they used Irish, a knot was cut into the stick. At the end of the day, they would be punished according to how many notches they had on said stick. I ask the children now to guess what country the tally stick happened in. Most of them settled for North Korea. At the moment, we're hearing a lot of noise from the far right. This is not the first time in the history of mankind that we have heard that kind of noise. But unfortunately, our children, our teenagers, aren't aware of it. So to them, all of this is new. In children's literature, we have an opportunity to remind them of the past. One thing I try to do in writing my books is to include an elderly person, a granny or granddad, so that there is a voice from another time, and hopefully a voice of experience and wisdom. I write for children because it's my job, and also my passion and my joy. It is one of the few careers that allows you to talk about being inspired. Imagine a plumber talking about inspiration and waiting for it to strike so he could fix your blocked sink. But in the arts, we get to talk about inspiration and, more importantly, to make room for it in our lives. I firmly believe that we are all creative, but some of us don't make any space for creativity, or we aren't allowed to, and so we never really get to know it. The common wisdom is that you are most inspired as a writer if you're sitting at your desk. And that's true enough. But I do love to think that there is something a little bit mysterious about it. Think of the old Irish poets of yore who had beautiful women come to them in a dream or a vision to inspire them to write. There are still people who say, that there is something paranormal about inspiration. One of my favourite writers is a woman called Elizabeth Gilbert, who wrote a wonderful book about creativity called Big Magic. She tells a brilliant story about this. It concerns the late American poet Ruth Stone. When Ruth Stone was a girl growing up in rural Virginia, she said that she would be working in the fields and she would see and hear a poem coming for her. She said it was like a thunderous train of air and it would come barreling down at her over the landscape. And when she heard it, she had to race to the house, grab a pen and paper and write it down while it thundered through her. Sometimes she wouldn't get to the house in time and the poem would go on, continuing its journey looking for another poet. And then there were moments when she would almost miss it. She'd run into the house and be looking for the paper, and the poem would pass through her. With one hand, she'd grab a pencil, and with the other, reach out to grab the poem, catching it by its tail. And she would pull it backwards into her body as she was writing it down with her other hand. The poem would come out on the page perfect and intact, but backwards from the last word to the first. Who wouldn't want a career where the likes of that could happen? My theme as Laureate Nanogue is making it up as we go along. I didn't actually mean that I would be making it up, though it's funny that everyone who knows me assumed that I did mean that. I'm not bitter. It was more that I would encourage children to make it up, to write, to create their full potential as creative beings. My vision for the next generation is that they wouldn't fear creativity. They would embrace it, that they would make it up as they go along and delight themselves and others with their imaginings. I'd like to see them all reading and writing, regardless of where they are in our society. All of our children deserve access to books and imagination. Our children in housing estates, on halting sites, on farms, in small towns and big cities, in direct provision. Because at the end of the day, creativity is about being human and our ability to express that and to pass it on. When they were babies, we taught them to walk with encouragement, practice, and perseverance. Through the unique power of reading, we can teach them to grow wings and to fly. Gurmeel Mahagi.